Thanks so much for tuning in to the Community Voices of Change podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Horgan. Through interviews with community leaders and the sharing of tangible resources and effective practices, we aim to support individuals working hard to strengthen our communities. Be sure to check out the show notes for each episode, where we will provide contact information for each guest and links to the resources we discuss. And now, on to our show. More and more companies are expanding their employee engagement initiatives to attract and retain talent. And one method of increasing engagement is by matching employee skills with nonprofit organizations addressing social issues. I'm super excited for our guest today, who's the CEO of Common Impact. It's a nonprofit organization that helps employees use their talents to strengthen communities across the country. Please join me in welcoming Danielle Holly to our podcast community. Welcome, Danielle.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for making the time to be with us today. So I'm curious, you know, before we jump into the work of Common Impact, I always like to get a good sense of where people come from and how they get involved in the nonprofit sector and really engaged in service. And so I'm wondering if you could share with us a little bit about how you got started in this work in the first place.
Sure. It feels like a long, long time ago. So I came out of undergrad and I was working at the New York Stock Exchange and the belly of the beast of the financial markets. And my day really ended at 4 p.m. when the bell rang. And so, you know, 22-year-old with a lot of disposable time was working with community organizations in the kind of late afternoons and evenings on some of their, you know, financial modeling, financial management projects, the skills that I was using during the day and kind of translating them in the evening. And it wasn't a long period of time for me, 2-3 years of my life, but it was incredibly defining, seeing the massive amounts of money that were moving through the markets each day and the power that these brokers had over that movement. And then, you know, walking down the street to the basement office of a tiny nonprofit organization who couldn't string together $500 to hire a proper bookkeeper. So they were having me show up late in the day to do that work for them. It just, you know, I just got hooked on this idea that there's got to be a better way to funnel resources across these sectors, across these communities, and literally across the block. And so that brought me up to BU's nonprofit management program, got an MBA, and was exposed to all of the great and hard work that the nonprofit sector was doing. And on the other side of it, was looking for an organization that was working at that intersection between the private sector and the nonprofit sector, and developing those relationships, those connections that I saw were really missing in my experience post-college. So the rest is history. That was, I don't know, I shouldn't tell you how long ago that was.
No, that's great. I think that's, it's an amazing story in terms of literally like across the street, recognizing just the difference in terms of access to resources and so forth.
Right.
So if we fast forward in time into the work that you're doing at Common Impact, one of the things that I found really exciting when reading through some of your latest impact was the fact that you, Common Impact as an organization, has supported 450 projects leveraging the skills of employees from lots of diverse companies, ranging from Marriott to Charles Schwab to Fidelity. I'm wondering if you can start by just telling us a little bit about, you know, the why behind Common Impact. What is the driver behind the mission?
Common Impact was founded in 2000 with the purpose of figuring out how talents can deploy what we consider their most strategic philanthropic asset, their people, their talent, towards capacity building challenges at nonprofit organizations. So nonprofits spend maybe 2% of their budget, sometimes even less than that, on the core mission functions that allow their organizations to operate: the marketing, technology, operations, strategic planning, talent development, the functional areas that the private sector spends an average of about 35% on. And rightly, right? That's what enables businesses to run, to understand what services, products, models are working. And when you think about just 2% of a budget going to models that are delivering critical community services. It's just it's an enormous gap. And what it creates is a nonprofit sector that is really running on fumes, when particularly the smaller organizations that don't have a lot of that support and function. So the idea behind Common Impact was get those skills and those talents from these big companies that do that work every day and are really resourced in that area, and have them volunteer their time in that way, in that skills-based way. So not painting a fence, but building a marketing plan or building a strategic plan or a database that will help organizations really sustain and run their programs. And that was now 17 years ago. This idea of skills-based volunteering was a really new idea, and now it's something that companies have just really caught on to. And now I think it's more than 50% of companies have some sort of formal skills-based or pro bono program, which is just really exciting to see.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I want to go back to a second for the statistics that you shared, because I find that it's fascinating. 35% of of what companies are spending is on that, what I would call like infrastructure, right? The operations right. behind their work. And the fact that nonprofits are spending such a small percentage of 2%. If we think about like the root cause of that, right? What do you think is the driver behind why nonprofits aren't investing more in that?
Funders, whether they're individual funders like you and me, or they're large institutional funders like Ford and Rockefeller, the motivation for giving is to make those programs scale and to put more food in the mouths of hungry people, to get more tutors in the after-school program. And so intuitively you think, okay, well, I'm going to give my dollar to that program and I want to see the return on that dollar. And my vision of social impact is, feeding more mouths or whatever that metric is for the organizations and the issues that we care about. They don't think, I want to give my money to building a database for this nonprofit organization, or I want to build a strategic plan. It just, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't have the tug on your heartstrings, but it is really the most impactful way that you can give as a donor. And the foundation community is now starting to move on this and realizing how important capacity is. Bridgespan actually just did a great study a couple months ago called Pay What It Takes Philanthropy, that really details for the different nonprofit organizations what it takes to run a successful organization and how funders should be thinking differently about it. But it takes education and it takes kind of a leap in intuition to sort that through.
Right. And what I love about the work that Common Impact is doing, when you think about this, all of the employees from all the different companies and the different projects that you guys are helping to facilitate, to the point you just made, right? And most funders aren't thinking about the operational side of the nonprofit. They're thinking about more of the programmatic, the frontline delivery, the return on that investment.
Right.
And what I love about your work is, I think by engaging employees with nonprofits in the same way that you walked across the street and helped an organization way back when, it's really important to say you're also raising people's awareness. You're not only delivering, valuable capacity to a nonprofit, but you're raising people's awareness around what it takes to deliver those services.
Right. Exactly.
So what are some examples? Let's dig into sort of bringing the work to life, if you will, right? So when you think about some of the companies like Charles Schwab or Fidelity, what are some of the examples of the skill-based volunteer projects that you guys are facilitating?
So Fidelity has a great and what I would consider a best-in-class program that's really focused on talent and leadership development. So what Common Impact learned pretty early on is that this isn't just a great model for the nonprofit organizations that are exposed, but it's a great experiential learning opportunity for the employees that are volunteering their time. So database developers who have never had a chance to make presentations in front of senior leadership, or employees at big companies who see just a small slice of a project or a very small component of a project, now are looking across business, across functional area, to figure out how this project aligns with strategic goals and the mission of an organization. And Fidelity has taken that concept, and these programs live on the talent development and the HR side of the business, the core business, where they're selecting their key leaders or their future leaders, right? The folks that are 10 to 15 years into the career and are really prime for that next level of leadership, putting them in this nonprofit environment to say, solve this gray matter strategic challenge that's a little bit amorphous, it's a new environment, and work with these really talented nonprofit professionals to figure out the models that work going forward. And that is hard, it's complex, it makes people really uncomfortable, and that's where you grow, right? And you also get a better product for the nonprofit organizations because employees just have a different level of skin in the game. So that's one model that I'm really proud of that Common Impact helped develop with Fidelity, and I think is one that we lift up a lot when we're talking about the business value of these programs. The other, Charles Schwab has one of the largest skills-based day of service, and this is one theme that I'm seeing with a lot of companies, is figuring out how to take skills-based volunteering and make it scalable through a day of service, you know, 4 to 6, sometimes 8-hour challenge. And Charles Schwab has something they call the Pro Bono Challenge in 8 of their regions, where they bring together teams of Schwabies, they call them, with Oh, and if two Schwabies get married, they're a Schwapple.
That's great.
I slowly learned the Schwisms, and my colleagues who run the program here at Common Impact now put a Schwa in front of everything. but that's neither here nor there. The day of service, I've got to admit, I was really skeptical about this model in the beginning, not just Charles Schwab's version, but just in general as a model. How much can you actually get done in 4 hours? And is this something that, you know, mimics the malaise of traditional volunteerism, where a company will say, we've got 100 people for you and they're going to come paint your fence next Wednesday at 5. Aren't you excited? to their nonprofit partners. But I've been really converted, because when the challenges are scoped and they're the right projects, they can really support an organization in taking the next step and thinking about old challenges in new ways. You know, we had one nonprofit partner come out of the last challenge and say, this team just solved for me in 4 hours what I've been trying to figure out for 4 years. And that was just really powerful. And I actually was recently talking to one of the Charles Schwab's partners out in the Phoenix area, the Boys and Girls Club of Scottsdale. And this is one of the best in class Boys and Girls Club. They were at one point the number one affiliate in the country. They had, you know, it's a super strong organization, proven model, 10 sites, 18,000 kids, huge presence. They came to us during a time of real transition. They were going through this massive leadership change. A lot of their leadership positions were unfilled. So they had this strong model, this strong program team, but they had lost a bit of their core and their vision, their direction. And given the number of sites and their footprint, that was a big deal, right? I mean, their programs were running, but to not have a strong center, they were just slowly wearing away. And this is when they were matched with this Pro Bono Challenge team, the Schwab team, who, spaghetti against the wall, just figured out, you know, what do they most care about? What are their values? What's their core mission? And the Boys and Girls Club had been so wrapped up in some of the internal challenges, right? Like, what's my staff going to think? What's my board going to think? And how are my donors going to be engaged? That they had lost sight in the immediate of the core mission and value, that at the end of the day, it's the kids that matter, and everything that they do has to be about the kids. And having this team come in and say, hey, wait a minute, we're thinking about this all wrong. Let's flip around the priorities that you've got here. And, you know, I won't I won't go through all of the details and the what followed, but you know, they just had a couple of retreats that regrounded the organization in their core mission and got everyone very quickly on the same page with, you know, timing was of the essence in this case. And now, you know, they're back to on a track where they could be the number one club again in the nation, because they've got their center back. And that happened in 4 hours. It's just, it's really inspiring to hear the leadership talk about this experience. And that's the power of the skills-based in general. It's not just expertise, but it's a fresh perspective. It's getting skilled professionals who are just thinking about things in a different way and aren't mired in the hard realities of the operations and the day-to-day that allow these really busy and talented nonprofit professionals to lift their heads up and see what's ahead of them.
What I love about that story with the Boys and Girls Club is it's such a great reminder that sometimes we can get, you know, we're so in focus in the work that we do day to day, right? Tactically executing against our plan day after day, that sometimes it's really important to hit the pause button and invite people in from the outside that aren't in our day to day world to give us an objective perspective that really maybe shakes the way that we're thinking. It challenges the assumptions that we're making. And so on the nonprofit end, it's really good to bring that objective point of view into the picture. I also think it's really important for individual employees who are engaging in this work to realize that not only do their marketing skills apply to the work that they're doing at Charles Schwab, but their marketing skills can be applicable to solving some of the community challenges that, you know, that live in their community, where they work, where they're raising their kids maybe, where they're going out and playing. You know, all of those things come into play. It's our community. And so people sort of connecting on a level that they wouldn't otherwise without Common Impact facilitating that.
And there's just a whole, there's a whole different level of engagement that you get as a human, right? Engaging with an organization when you are giving something that is unique and specific to your skill set and your experience set, and you're not giving something that your neighbor next door can give, but that there's a direct connection between what you like to do and what you're really good at and what you're giving back. And not only does that make the most of all of the hours that you're investing, those very, very few precious hours that we all have to spend outside of our day-to-day work, but it also connects you more deeply to these organizations and to your point around, you know, one community and, you know, breaking down the silos. There's nothing that connects those dots more effectively than just getting how you contribute and how you fit into that picture.
Absolutely. I love the examples of Charles Schwab and Fidelity. And I'm curious, it made me think about, you know, for companies that are out there that are in that 50% that aren't currently engaging, right, in skill-based volunteerism, how do you, if you were to rewind in time and think about the beginning of how you were cultivating the relationship with Fidelity or Charles Schwab or any other corporate partner that you're working with at Common Impact, talk about, like, what's that cultivation and sort of on-ramp look like as you help them to understand both the business case, but also the community case too?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that feels so important in those early conversations, whether a company is having them internally or they're engaging an organization like Common Impact or one of their nonprofit partners, is to recognize the different parts of the business that these programs and these models hit. And the companies, while this is progressing and moving, are still pretty separate in terms of how they think about talent development and business value, and then separately the foundation, corporate citizenship, community relations side of the house where they're engaging with the community. And what one of the biggest barriers to these programs really taking root is when they live solely in one of those areas and the other folks are not engaged. So we always ask for HR and talent development, leadership development, business leaders to be at the table along with the foundation and community representatives, because it really does take both to move these programs forward and to understand what companies are best at. So, no, not a Marriott is going to be able to give something different than a Schwab, and the way that you activate and share employee skills is super different in those two businesses. And there's no kind of one size fits all. But if you get the right people at the table early on, it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly what model can work for a company. And you have the support you need to move it forward and to pilot and to refine and to understand that, you know, it's not going to work perfectly out of the gate the first time, but you'll have the support that you need to move it forward.
That's great. I mean, I think obviously getting the right people on the bus, and then also helps you to foster lots of internal champions, right? And so it's not just one person from a nonprofit with one person from a company coming together to figure out how they're going to build a partnership, but it's multiple partners from each side coming together, which, you know, ultimately I would imagine it leads to greater sustainability of that relationship.
Right.
Are you finding that?
Exactly. And engaging the managers of the folks that are going to participate, I'd say, is another one of those factors that is often overlooked, especially when you have very high level buy-in, you know, C-suite buy-in, and a lot of companies are just excited about this type of work these days, because you can't be a company in the world today, or at least in the United States today, and not have some sort of mission-oriented or community-oriented programming. You're just getting demands from customers and from your employees to have a stance on community issues. So we're seeing a lot of C-level buy-in. And then, of course, particularly the millennial workforce, they want to engage in this type of programming. So you're getting a groundswell from your junior staff, but the managers are the folks that are quote unquote losing their people in the middle of the day, or are, you know, they see empty desks and the employees are, you know, off gallivanting at some nonprofit can be the perception. So if you can engage managers and underscore the professional leadership development value of these programs, and that it's far beyond what you learn in these expensive corporate training programs, then you've got a new level of sustainability. But so often companies miss that piece of it because it's hard to engage that level of leadership because there are a lot of managers. So, you know, I am making this all sound difficult, and to some extent it is, but if you can make it work and you design it well up front, then it can become pretty turnkey.
Right. I mean, with any, you know, solid and sustainable set of results that people want, I think putting the intentional time up front in the planning process is so important, right? And I think human behavior oftentimes is we hear about a problem, we just want to jump in and start working at it, right? Instead of taking a step back and figuring out, okay, if we're going to get to a sustainable solution, not just a Band-Aid or a transactional solution, how do we sit down and make sure we've got the right people at the table, we've got the right level of buy-in, we're mapping out what our plan's going to look like together, and we're celebrating our successes and working through our challenges along the way. I think what you're laying out is, you know, that's the roadmap for success when it comes to skill-based volunteerism, but for so many other projects as well.
Exactly. That's right.
So I'm curious, what are some of the other trends that you're seeing? Obviously, again, you shared some great examples with Fidelity and Charles Schwab, and I saw on your website that you've engaged over 1,300 volunteers in this work, again, 450 projects. You know, what are the trends that you're seeing within the skill-based volunteerism movement, if you will?
We're seeing more and more integration between the financial investments that companies are making in their communities with their volunteerism and skills-based volunteerism efforts. So, you know, thinking about not just providing grants to nonprofits for specific initiatives, but also thinking about what are the skills and talents that are going to help implement those grants and make the most of those investments. And often, you know, nonprofits really need that support. They, a lot of our partners are starting to really focus their investment on a couple of key partners or a couple of key issue areas. And that's a general trend in corporate social responsibility and giving. But organizations, and particularly organizations that are on the smaller end, I'd say less than 5 million, it will need new infrastructure to really expand programming or really hit those mission marks. So companies are starting to think strategically about, okay, well, what talent and what skill set can we also provide to nonprofits to further that investment? And the other thing that we're doing, we're specifically working at, but we're also seeing more of a need for, is because there's such an interest from the corporate side, not just in skills-based volunteering, but in CSR in general, nonprofits are now, the floodgates are open in terms of resources in some way, shape, or form. And the power dynamics that exist within the corporate and nonprofit relationships become more of an everyday challenge. And as with any power dynamic, the more powerful party is the one that the onus is on them, the companies, to really create that sort of space where you can be honest and open, and nonprofits can say no and push back. But nonprofits also need tools to think about how to have that conversation and how to educate companies on their mission areas and the fact that they are in this for the long haul. They're not going to have necessarily short-term quarterly results to share, but that the project's initiatives are leading to something that's a much larger, much more nebulous, and much more potentially impactful challenge. So that's something that we've been thinking a lot about at Common Impact, because we, of course, have been beating the drum on corporate engagement and trying to get more and more companies involved. But you can't just work on one side of the equation. You really have to equip the nonprofit sector to absorb those resources and that interest.
So that actually lends itself to a question that I have for you in regards to when you talk about, you know, looking at both sides of the equation. The fact that, and this is sort of a, I guess, like a two-part question. So the first part is just, you know, how do we, and this goes back to the beginning, a lot of nonprofit organizations have such a small sort of infrastructure, limited capacity, trying to do a huge amount of work with very little. You know, how do we prepare nonprofits appropriately to really maximize the engagement of skill-based volunteers, sort of like the first part of the question. And I guess the second part is something like the Charles Schwab example, where they can, you know, you have a group of expertise that come in, say, in the marketing space and help a nonprofit really think through their marketing strategy. How do you then, on the flip side, once that day is over, the implementation of that strategy, I would imagine, becomes a sort of a secondary challenge for that organization. So how do we continue to build that organization's capacity?
Sure. So on the first point, you know, what's the right project? What's the right organization? We tend to look for organizations that are at an inflection point where this set of resources or this particular capacity building project will allow them to move to the next level of growth or mission delivery, whatever that is for the organization. And, you know, the projects that are right, it's so often, and I speak as the head of a nonprofit, right? So I live this every day, that the urgent often drowns out the important in terms of the projects that will sustain your organization. So thinking about, you can't boil the ocean. You can't do every capacity building project. That is something that would be of benefit to your organization, but choosing the ones that are going to make a real difference across your staff, across your programs, and the ones that, you know, have high priority, but aren't on a super critical timeline. Because the reality of it is, and with skills-based volunteers, you get a deeper sense of engagement and commitment. They're still volunteers and they still have day jobs. And so having a timeline that is a flexible frame that everyone kind of agrees to and adheres to, but is a project that can have a little bit of give while being a priority. So I always say a kind of priority project, but not on a priority timeline necessarily.
Great advice. So what about on the flip side in terms of like implementation? And again, from a capacity standpoint, you know, I can imagine it's exciting in the moment when you have the skill-based volunteer at the table. But in a case like you know, some of the skill-based volunteer projects that are more done in a day, if you will. How do you build the capacity of a nonprofit to implement?
So, and we actually just have, we have a tool that's coming out soon that's called the Pro Bono Calculator, and it helps nonprofits think through what the cost of implementation will be from both a staff time perspective, a new systems perspective, and that's built into the upfront conversations before we embark on a skills-based project. We talk about, okay, how is this system going to be implemented, whether it's a plan or a system or whatever it is, how is the nonprofit going to bring this forward? Because the expertise is going to go away and some of it will be transferred, but you're not going to have this team or this individual volunteer for the long haul. So it needs to be something that the organization can sustain, to your point. And that's very, it's got to be built into the structure of the project. And that is one of the key points, and it's hard when you're engaging a corporate team and a nonprofit team. There's just a completely different world of resources that these two organizations, these two sets of people are coming from. And part of the role that Common Impact plays, but that you can equip nonprofits and companies to play, is to level set and say, you know, this is the set of resources that we're working with. And so the program has to be built with those resources in mind. And that might mean that we don't create the shiniest ball at the end of this project, but we are going to create something that is going to be really useful and sustainable for us. I was at a kickoff meeting at one of our Fidelity projects a couple weeks ago. And, you know, 10 years into this work, this is still my favorite meeting. And there was, you know, a new hire team from Fidelity and a small organization, budget size of 250K. And the executive director was presenting the organization and talking about its mission and its programs. And then it said its budget size, 250K. And the one of the team members was, great. All right. So we have 250K to implement this project. And here's how we're going to think about deploying that. And the ED was like, no. We have $0 to implement this project and 250K for all of the programs that you just heard about. And that's it's a humbling moment for corporate employees to understand how much nonprofits do with so little. But it also, having those conversations up front can also just reframe what the solution looks like so that it's truly sustainable for the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to your point earlier about, like, what is the benefit when you think about just engaging in skill-based volunteerism for employees? I mean, just imagine in that case, right? The problem-solving skills, the critical thinking, the innovation, creativity skills that are being fostered in that project, knowing that you have such limited resources, but perhaps a big challenge ahead of you that you need to figure out a solution for in a sustainable way, mm-hmm. and how that translates back to the work they do in their jobs day to day. It's pretty powerful when you think about the win-win for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we've had some of our corporate executives come to us and say, thank you, you've got my team to think more creatively, because we're used to at big companies, you know, throwing money at a challenge, and that's how we find solutions. And this, you know, it helps us think about what are the other potential options out here? How can we work with what we've got to solve that same challenge?
Yeah. So one of my last questions before we transition to a few final round out questions would be, when you think about your team, you know, you, as you mentioned, you're a nonprofit yourself as Common Impact. And so when your team is managing so many different projects and so many different partnerships with companies and facilitating those relationships with nonprofit partners across the country, what are some of the key lessons learned or the tools that you and your team have found helpful in being able to manage lots of projects, keep lots of balls up in the air at once, as you advance the mission of Common Impact?
Sure. So, I mean, there is some just science to project management and keeping things moving on track. And also, you know, for Common Impact, knowing how much is too much. So for our projects, we know that each staff member can't really take more than 10 on at once, because it's just too many stakeholders, too many moving pieces, no matter how many kind of tools and tricks you've got. It's not possible to be a really strong steward once you get to too many projects that you're managing. But within that science, the art of it for us at least has been to find those common connections really early on so that you're developing relationships between two groups of people who are seemingly incredibly different and have very different backgrounds and interests and skills and experiences day to day. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all people, and most of these people are living within the same communities. And just like, you know, I walk down the street to a very different experience and world, that creating that connection and saying, okay, we're just down the block and we go to the same grocery store and our kids go to the same school, or we are both really excited about this or that, having a discussion that brings that out very early on in the project will make project management so much easier down the line. Part of the special sauce is figuring out what's driving people and making sure that folks are saying what they think and being really frank on these calls, kind of mid and these meetings midstream, to say, nope, this is not exactly what we were thinking about. We need to redirect here to get to a better solution and end. And folks just feel more comfortable saying that if you feel like you've established a friendship or relationship up front.
I love that. You know, I think that is such critical advice. The two things that I heard you say, number one is just know your capacity is the first one. And I think the second one around relationships is so critical. And just taking the time again, intentionally to build those relationships. Again, I think a lot of times people are eager to jump into a project and jump right into a set of tasks or figuring out what the roadmap's going to look like. And then further down the road, when more and more conflict starts to arise, they realize that they never spent the time up front actually getting to know each other and finding common ground upon which the rest of the project can be built. And so your advice about doing that intentionally throughout the project management process is really, really helpful. It's also one that's, I would imagine, leads to a great deal of sustainability in terms of those partnerships and that work. So one of my final questions for you is one of my favorite questions, and that is, in the work that you do, obviously you've been working at trying to mobilize skill-based volunteers and really address a wide variety of social issues that nonprofits are working at every day through the work of Common Impact. And so I'm curious, when you sort of hit the pause button and zoom all the way out for a minute and think about the dream that you have, right, for this work, I'm sure you get to a point where at times you're just like, oh, I wish this could happen, or I wish this could be a reality. What is that dream, and what would it take to make that happen?
That's a big question.
My favorite one.
Right now I'm dreaming of a big pot of coffee.
Yeah, there you go.
But more macro than that, my dream, my goal for this work is that, you know, Common Impact wouldn't have to exist, that individuals wouldn't think about themselves as corporate employees or nonprofit professionals, that we are just all part of the same ecosystem and social sector, and we all are facing the same challenges and want to give our piece of that, our, whether it's skills or experiences or expertise, whatever it is, to working together to solve that and letting go of the, you know, things that we identify with right now that are really siloed in terms of sector. We're starting to move that way. You know, all of these for-purpose businesses that are cropping up, social enterprises that are using market-based models to do social good as a primary function. The millennial generation, it's not just millennials, but they really have provided a mouthpiece to wanting to have work-life integration and think about social good as a part of their day jobs. I want those lines to be completely blurred and for us to just get back to really what drives us as people. And it's so easy to do if you just get into the same room with folks and realize what those common connections and challenges are and where folks can align to help solve them. But the getting in the room is the hard part. You know, back to what I was sharing at the onset around my story. And I met those community organizations because I walked out of the stock exchange at lunch one day to get a hot dog at the vendor down the street. And I was ranting about how I wanted more meaning in my my day job and how I wish I could connect with, you know, the people, organizations that are outside of the stock exchange crazy world. And the person behind me happened to be the ED of that organization. They were right across the street. I would never have made that connection if not for chance. So we need more organizations and people just thinking about how do I reach across the aisle, whether it's political affiliation or the sector that you're working for, and figure out, okay, yeah, we're not that different. Let's figure out how to work at this together.
I love that dream. I'll share that dream with you. I think that's fantastic.
We've got two of us.
Exactly. And so that's my final question, which is if there's other dreamers out there that are aligning to that vision, right? And they want to learn more about the work of Common Impact. They want to step up and find a way of connecting in their communities to move progress forward for a nonprofit organization, or a nonprofit, frankly, is listening and says, you know, hey, I really want to leverage some skill-based volunteers to build our capacity and build and strengthen those relationships. How can they get in touch with the work that you guys are doing?
Sure. So you could go to www.commonimpact.org. And specifically, our blog is where we talk about and share ideas and really love to hear from folks on what they're doing, what they're trying, what they're experimenting with. And then we're on Twitter as well at Common Impact. And I am on Twitter at dholly8 and would also love to hear from folks. And, you know, we're trying to build a movement here. So we're really excited to connect.
Awesome. And we'll make sure we put all that information in the notes from today's show as well. And then just encourage people, you have lots of great resources. It sounds like you have an additional resource with the pro bono calculator coming out soon. So whether you're a company or a nonprofit organization and you're looking to advance some skill-based volunteerism work in your community, definitely check out not only the contact information, but all of the resources that are available as well. And I also want to do a quick plug because I really enjoy reading your work, Danielle. So Danielle, you're a contributor for Nonprofit Quarterly. And so we'll put a link out to that as well, just so people can see some of the articles that you have published through Nonprofit Quarterly too.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, just in closing, Danielle, I just want to say thank you. I think that in the reflecting on our conversation and our work together through the years, for me, I would say what I appreciate most about your leadership and the work that you're doing at Common Impact is really about, again, generating awareness around the social issues that we all share as one community and creating really meaningful and action-oriented outlets for people to connect. Just the power of the relationships that we've talked about is one thing. And I feel like oftentimes there's this the gap between people's desire for change and the action that's needed to make it happen. And I really feel like Common Impact is playing such a critical role in facilitating closing that gap so that when people raise their hand and say, hey, I'm interested, they are immediately and in pretty quickly matched to a project that makes sense in terms of scope and time frame and all of that. So just a huge, you know, thank you to your leadership at Common Impact, a huge thank you to your team and to all of those companies and nonprofits that are working with Common Impact to address these social issues and strengthen our one community. I just want to say thank you and continue to applaud your work. So thank you so much for being a part of our podcast today. And we'll look forward to following along the results and the impact that Common Impact is driving across the country.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast.
Absolutely. Take care.